Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz, and this is my podcast. Welcome to another episode starring a gentleman that I'm a big fan of. If you're a Joss Whedon fan, you know him, you love him. Fran Kranz, star of Dollhouse, The Cabin in the Woods, and outside of the Whedonverse, he's done a lot of really cool projects, one of which is a new Tribeca film, as I tape this. The Tribeca Film Festival just wrapped up this weekend here in New York, and Fran stars in a new film called Murder of a Cat, which is cool because he gets to be the star. And Fran's kind of carved out a cool character actor career early on, but it's fun to sort of see him be the guy. We talk a lot about that, and Fran is just a cool guy. He's somebody who I have some mutual friends with, and I got him to know the last couple of years. First time was when he was actually on Broadway here in New York in Death of a Salesman with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Andrew Garfield, and it was directed by Mike Nichols, like this amazing production. And as you'll hear in the beginning of this interview, I was talking to Fran about having just seen Andrew Garfield because Spider-Man is everywhere, and I'm in the middle of doing lots of interviews with that cast. And as you'll see, the first few minutes of the podcast are devoted to some very poignant recollections of that production, and his talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman is sad, but also I don't know, strangely comforting too, in that he has really fond recollections, and I was really happy to hear that. Fran's a cool guy. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Whether you know his career or not, you're going to fall in love with this guy. He's great, and I know he's got bigger and better things ahead of him. So this is the podcast starring Fran Kranz. Next week, speaking of Spider-Man, we've got a really cool one with Mark Webb, director of The Amazing Spider-Man, 500 Days of Summer, and of course, the new film, Amazing Spider-Man 2. So as always, check out MTV.com for all my interviews, after hours. There's tons of stuff on there. Thanks for listening as always. Here he is. Enjoy, Mr. Fran Kranz.
I just saw Andrew Garfield last night.
I was gonna ask you, did you do Spider-Man?
Yeah, I was just telling Michelle.
Was it insane?
It was insane.
It was probably not as big as our premiere.
I think it was pretty much the same, probably saw it.
Probably,
I had to
guess. What, Siegfried, you guys? It was that, yeah.
Ziegfeld, yeah.
Ziegfeld, right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm actually headed off to, they're doing a lot of stuff around the city, so I'm going to Queens, where they're doing some stuff at a school.
Wow, more stuff? More Andrew's stuff. Going down?
Gosh. He's been traveling the world.
He's the man.
He's awesome.
I mean, he is, like, the best. You know.
He's kind of interesting, and by the way, I don't, we can literally. I'm recording now. I don't need to.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah, why not?
We'll keep it casual.
I mean, I talk about Andrew Garfield all the time. my crush on Andrew
Welcome
Garfield.
Welcome to the Andrew Garfield podcast. Did they tell you that you were here to talk about Andrew?
That's fine. I'm actually. That's better.
Top three Andrew Garfield performances. Go.
the Facebook. Well, what was it called? The Social Network trailer.
that cover was amazing.
It was an amazing trailer, and I was like, "Wow, that guy's." It was that Radiohead. It was like Creep, little kids singing Radiohead.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what that is, but have you ever heard of the album The Langley School Music Project?
Actually haven't, no.
It was this thing in, I guess, the 70s, and it's some sort of middle school in Canada, and the music teacher got them all together, and I guess he was kind of like this sort of hippie music teacher, because all the music's like Beach Boys, David Bowie. It's like a bunch of sort of...
It's cool.
And he gets all these little kids, and they all play... He teaches them all instruments, and they're playing like xylophones, and it's like... It's not that tight or whatever, refined or whatever, but it's like awesome.
That's
it's
amazing.
Really cool. Yeah, the Langley School Music Project. That's what that whole... Because I guess that was an entire... It was all Radiohead or no?
The
album?
I don't think so. I mean,
on the whatever
social
the social network used.
I think so.
But
no,
it was definitely
Trent Reznor, and it was like,
okay.
Score and stuff.
Definitely creep on the trailer.
Yes.
Which then put that probably in his like fourth best performance.
Well, obviously you have to go with Death of a Salesman, where you obviously met Andrew.
Number one, yeah. I was a huge fan in this weird, you know, geeky man crush kind of way. I was like most excited to work with him, yeah. You know, when I got that. But because we were sort of peers or whatever, yeah. You know, contemporary. Like, he's my age and I thought he was the best. Like, I really did. After Social Network, I was, you know, really excited about him. And I think at that point he was Spider-Man. So, you know, the sort of buzz that sort of generated kind of gave him a status, you know what I mean? That yeah. I was kind of like, oh, this is sweet. I'm working with Andrew Garfield, who's sort of number one young actor right now. And yeah. So that felt like an accomplishment to be in the room with him,
totally.
You know?
That must
have
been like,
he'd be like, so like, wow, don't ever talk to me again.
But that must have been like Man Crusher-Palooza, like that production.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Literally, you had
Mike Nichols
directing, you had obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's insane. And then also to get to know, I didn't know Bill Camp, but he's huge in the theater community.
Sure.
And in only, you know, in a matter of like weeks, I was like, okay, yeah, Bill Camp, another man crush.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's the guy that's like backstage watching hockey, swearing at the TV, and then like goes on the last second and is
amazing.
Like amazing, like
were you
breaking
like that,
hearts.
Or were you like stressed?
No, I think I was stressed the entire time. Well, you know, like, because like Phil, who's was the leader, like he demanded not in any kind of like, you know, mean way. He wasn't necessarily tough. It was just that his like level of excellence and like commitment and like sort of dedication and passion, you know, it trickled down. You
yeah.
know what I mean? There was like, I mean, Bill could get away with it because he was, you know, buddies with Phil and he was like his contemporary and he was, you know what I mean?
Right.
He sort of, and also he was perfect, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
he just nailed every performance and there was no question Bill Camp was going to be fine. So like, but I think just for me personally, there was no screwing around. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It was like 110% commitment and trying, never sort of relaxing and being like, oh, I got it, so I can take the, you know, not
yeah.
to take the night off, but feel, I never was, I always felt the performance could be better, you know
gotcha.
What I mean? And that was something he taught, because he was never satisfied, you know
Phil
what I mean?
Wasn't.
Phil,
yeah,
it was always like, trying to find more. You know, before
yeah.
every performance, he was out on the stage, sitting on the chair in that kitchen set, and just holding the script, and just kind of like, slumped over
yeah.
and just kind of eyes closed, kind of muttering to himself, just sort of like, just brow furrowed, just, you know what I mean? Like
right.
so intense and just trying to sort of like dig deeper, find more, like solve these problems. Cause
and this is literally like the actor of our time.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Like, arguably the best actor.
I know.
He's killing himself like and beating up on himself to get better with these performances.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, because now, obviously, with him passing away, there's like a, I mean, you know, he's, like, got legendary status,
yeah.
but it was already coming
yeah.
together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it was already there, and I think, you know, sadly, these things happen, and you sort of realize it, or finally put the stamp on it, you
yeah.
know, the label, but, it, like, it was there, we all knew it, and he really, like, I mean, he that was one of, I used to joke, and, like, it's sad now, and I joked that, like, he didn't like acting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we'd go leave a rehearsal, and I'd be like, I don't think Phil enjoys acting. Like, he seems so, like, pissed off, like,
right.
sometimes, you know what I mean?
Right.
And he, I remember him saying it's not storytelling, it's problem solving, and that's what it seemed like. It seemed to frustrate him. It seemed to be truly, like, he was obviously passionate and dedicated, but he, you know, he wanted to find the sort of logic and truth behind each action and decision and, you know, thing the character does.
Right.
You know, everything it says, you know, he says and blah, blah, blah. He demanded sort of finding the truth in that and the sense of it. And when you have a character that's essentially going crazy and then kills himself,
yeah.
that's like, you know, I mean, I it's a recipe for disaster. But, I, you know, at the same time, you know, I know, you know, that when that show ended, he was happy. You know what I mean? I mean, he was obviously a great weight off his, you know, lifted off of him. But I know, you know what I mean? And you can look at all kinds of things in, like, hindsight or whatever. But, you know, as passionate as he was about it and so much as it must have troubled him, you know, I saw him in this relief and this happiness, and like that, you know, eventually I saw like, oh yeah, he loves this, like he needs this, you know.
Is that one of those things outside of family that's just someone that shook you to the core when they on their passing, in terms of like somebody that you had an acquaintance with?
Yeah,
obviously.
Well, I mean, it when because it was my friend. I woke up. I was in L.A., so the 3-hour time difference, I kind of woke up to sort of a bunch of text, you know, but nothing so specific, you know. So I woke up and it was like, I'm sorry about your friend. And so I was kind of like, shit, like, what is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what?
That
don't text me that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went on IMDb, which didn't have, I don't know, I went to sort of these, like, I think Deadline or IMDb, because I assumed it was, like, an actor or something, because no one necessarily personal, like a family member, hadn't said anything yet, and it was, like, I think CNN where I first saw it, and it was definitely, it was shocking. Obviously, I knew that in the last May or, you know, a year before, he had had a, you know, his rehab stint.
Yeah,
and that sort of really shocked me. And I texted back and forth with him then, and you know, not getting into it, but just, you know, sort of wishing him well and, like, saying how much I love him. You know, he was someone that it meant the world to me because he really cared about me. He called me out after the show ended. I came back to New York to do a couple of readings of, like, a play, a Kenneth Lonergan play, which was, like, the coolest thing in the world. And Phil was directing it. John C. Reilly was a part of it. And you know, he called me out. He was like, can you come out to New York and do this? I think you'd be really, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And, like, that was, like, the fact that he was still keeping in touch was, like, I have the greatest in my corner.
The test.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
It was a big deal. And anyway, so it took a while because people kept saying I'm sorry, and throughout the day, and I kind of felt like, why, you know, this is like a, you know, why are people apologizing about this celebrity? And then it's kind of sad. I was after the Super Bowl, you know, that most of the day had passed, and I remember my mom calling me that night, and that's when it really hit me, and like, you know, that I was like, this was my friend, you know, this is someone that meant the world to me.
Right.
And that I loved, and then it hit me, like, you know, the way those things do. But it was a delayed reaction, certainly. And then, you know, yeah.
So switching gears a bit, you're back. Obviously, you were in New York for that one. There's a campus that segue for Death of a Salesman, but you're back here in Tribeca for,
I know,
a much different kind of project, which
yeah.
I enjoyed. Murder of a Cat. I watched.
Oh, did you get to see it?
Yeah, I did.
It's totally crazy.
It's bizarre. It's amazing. It's, I mean, I don't even know, I know how you describe it. It's kind of what, like, it's like film noir.
Yeah.
Meets,
well, the
I don't
the
really
guys
know
the
what.
The oh. The writer is Bob Snow, Christian Malagese. I've actually butchered his last name. It's Brazilian. I don't know. But anyway, they're brilliant. They're great. And they wanted to make Chinatown in the suburbs. So they were committed to that sort of level of seriousness to it. You know what I mean? So they were like, watch Chinatown, watch The Long Goodbye, Robert with Elliot Gould. That was like a really big inspiration for us. Just in tone and sort of, you know, the kind of swagger that he had in that movie that just totally is inappropriate on this kind of weirdo, you know what I mean? This basically just like the biggest like oddball you could imagine, and finding the humor in that, but also sort of the what's grounded about it, you know, that this guy, it's his best friend that's murdered, you know what I mean? yeah, that's the thing. It's like the movie's about a guy who lives with his mom and his best friend's his cat, and he's like a 30-year-old.
Sure.
So
there's like 20 minutes in a bathroom, basically.
Yeah. I demanded that. I was like, well, wait a minute. I kept saying, like, I picture this guy in his bathrobe the whole movie because, like, his cat, you know, he just lounges around the house and he's in his bathrobe all the time, and when his cat dies, he's not going to shower and change.
Right.
He's going to hit the streets and, like, go, he's going to go get revenge in what he's wearing. And then, so I got away with that. I was like, no, I think he's still in his bathrobe, you know, with the wardrobe and everything.
He's a more focused Jeff Lebowski.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and someone mentioned that, and I believe it or not, I hadn't thought of that for a while, but the crime films or these noir films set in a sort of more absurd situation, or where the plot isn't really, the stakes aren't really that high. But I mean, I don't know. I still
to
think
him, they're hot. That's
yeah, if someone
thing.
Killed my pet, you know, I mean, that's like, a, yeah, no, that's, I don't
that's
know. That's
hardcore.
Yeah, it's hardcore.
Revenge is a song.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Anyway, but so, yeah, it couldn't be a more different project. And I've missed New York, obviously, with the, you know, that being, the salesman being such a big deal. I've been trying to get back here. I even had a play lined up, and then I shot a pilot, and they moved the dates, and I couldn't do the play. And so I've been really dying to get out here. So this is really exciting, because Tribeca's, you know, cooler and cooler, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this movie's really funny, and I got a great part, and there's a cool cast with Greg Kinnear, J.K. Simmons, Blythe Danner, Leonardo Nam, who's hysterical in the movie. I'm forgetting people. Nikki Reed.
I've always been a team Greg Kinnear from the start. That guy is,
dude,
like,
yeah,
amazing.
You know what I mean? What was it? As Good as It Gets, like, is an obvious one. But he, like, I don't know. Little Miss Sunshine is everyone loves, and it's so great. But, like, I think his performance is, like, critical to that movie. You know what I mean? I always, like, I forget what's his name was nominated. And, you know, it's a movie that sort of, you know, we all know is great, and it feels ensemble. But, like, I thought he kind of gave that movie the sort of substance and, like, the heart that
totally.
It's otherwise. You know what I mean? When he has that moment where meeting the sort of the, whatever it is, the infomercial guy, and it's just kind of heartbreaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's always been a favorite of mine. So it was a real treat working with him, and we were lucky to get him with scheduling, and so we kind of shot him out early.
Yeah.
Which made it kind of fun because it was like little chapters of movie stars in our like 4 week shoot. You know, it was this quick
get
little indie
week.
Yeah, exactly. It was like who's the famous person today, which was really nice because you know it gets tiring and. That was a way to, like, you know, revitalize the set, you know what I mean?
Is it, I mean, one of the refreshing things in for me in seeing you in this thing is, like, you get to be the guy, you know, you're the guy in this.
Yeah.
Is that important
thanks.
At this stage in your career to, like, get a couple of those under your belt?
For sure. And to feel like it's successful. you know, people are like, this is your first lead role, and, like, I guess it is, but I also I know that I've done, you know, and this I'm going to sound like a jerk, but like I've been number one on the call sheet before.
Right.
It just like hasn't gone well, maybe, you know? or it's sort of an ensemble, or you know. But this is a movie that I think is really working. It's not for everyone. It's really weird, but it has an audience. It's really funny. It's really quirky. I mean, I think if anyone that's a pet lover will like enjoy this on some level,
totally.
You know, and I love its originality, you know, and so to be a lead of something that I'm believing in and I believe is successful is new and very important to me. You know, I like playing different roles. You know, I don't want to be totally set in the comedic thing. You know, I played early on stoners and slackers,
right.
And then sort of more neurotic, kind of nerdy, and then like tech geniuses. I just did a pilot, and I'm a tech genius, but he's a little more adult than my other tech geniuses. You know, he's a little more, So, you know, I'm trying to find that transition where it's just like, oh, Fran Kranz, he's, you know, an actor. You know, he's a good actor, and I want to be known as versatile. And this role... He's a total weirdo, but what's nice about it is that his alter ego, he makes toys, you know, his hobby, or he thinks it's actually a business, but it's a hobby. And his sort of favorite toy, or his sort of leading man in his sort of toy line is this guy named Doghouse Riley, who is sort of Elliot Gould or Nicholson from Chinatown. And so when he gets deep into the case and finding who killed his cat, he sort of takes on this persona. And then it's an opportunity. It's still very silly, and I'm not trying to be cool, but it's sort of an opportunity to transition from the kind of oddball running around in the bathrobe to sort of, you know, sort of glimmers, little flashes of, like, a normal leading man. You know what I mean? Whether or not he is successful in the role, his commitment to it, his sort of, bizarre, delusional, you know, whatever you call it, imagination, you know, that there you see sort of flashes of this detective, and that's very cool for me.
You even get
movie.
The Pretty Woman makeover.
Yeah, absolutely, totally. Nikki Reed, who I guess actually cuts hair, although in that scene she's cutting a wig.
Oh, gotcha.
We couldn't risk.
That wasn't your own horrible hair. That's good to know.
That wig was ridiculous. No, there was a scene where there's a scene after my cat dies where I'm on the roof holding a candlelight vigil, and then the next morning, it was a cool shot where we were shooting my POV from the roof, but upside down on the street, and you see a jogger sort of jogging at the top of the screen upside down, and then we reveal that I'm hanging off the roof with my head down, but the wig defied gravity. Do you know what I mean? The wig wouldn't move, and we were like, well, we probably shouldn't use this shot. It just looks ridiculous.
What's up? Because I don't think we've ever talked, at least you and I, about like your beginnings and the first kind of roles. So like, what, like when you came out of school at Yale, right?
Yeah.
What was like the first gig? What was literally the first paying gig?
The out of college was the TV set. But I was lucky enough to grow up in LA and go to school with someone, a couple kids in particular, whose parents were in the industry. And one of them, this guy, Mark Platt, who's a producer, who does a ton of stuff out here on Broadway. He's got a new show with Idina Menzel, and I can't remember the name.
If Them.
There, thank you. Yeah, but he was like, he did Wicked. He did like the Legally Blonde movies. Yep. I think he's just did Into the Woods, the movie. Wow. Yeah, so he's... And at that time he was not. Now he's, you know, becoming somewhat of a giant, you know. But his daughter Sam was in a play with me, and he saw the play, and he was like, "You're good. Like you could do this." And he got me a manager, and I was like 17 years old, and that was a huge deal. So I was on an episode of Frasier when I was in high school, which was awesome. And it was like a season premiere. Anyway, whatever. You can find it.
I definitely will.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Then I did Donnie Darko when I graduated. And oddly, there's four people from my high school in Donnie Darko.
Jake
Gyllenhaal,
right?
Yeah, Maggie, who I didn't know. She was older. And Jake was a senior when I was a sophomore. And then my friend Gary Lundy, who is in my grade, he plays one of Jake's buddies, Donnie Darko's buddies. Anyway, so I had those like early roles to sort of get an agent through college. But I was determined, you know, I was going to graduate college. Yeah. I was not like, you know. Also, those tiny performances weren't. Yeah, my parents were like, "Yeah, drop out of college. Yeah, you were in Donnie. You were the clown in Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
You got this. Yeah." So the TV set was my first.
And that's a good movie. By
that's
the way,
that's an awesome movie.
Jake Kasdan,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Jake Kasdan wrote and directed it. And you know, yeah, it's about a the making of a television pilot. And for anyone in the business, even peripherally, like they'll get that movie. It's hysterical.
Yeah, Duchovny, right?
Duchovny is the writer of this TV pilot, and I play the actor he doesn't want.
Right.
They you know, they test actors. They'll test a group of actors, and it's sort of known that if the writer falls in love with a guy, like, don't just test him, because the network is just going to look for something wrong with him.
Right.
So you gotta put a few guys in there. And I mean, this is true. This is the sad thing. I was right out of college. I hadn't done a pilot season, really. So I understood my role as a kind of douchey actor, like the douche, you know, the vain kind of idiot, sort of really sort of unreliable or inconsistent actor. You don't know what you're going to get on a take, and he's like hitting on everyone on set, and he's like buys the fancy car like before his check arrives. You know what I mean? That guy. And
well, it sounds like you went to high school with a couple of these.
yeah. No, I mean, it was the role was a gift. The role was brilliant, and I got it, but I didn't fully understand like how much this movie nailed pilot season. Anyway, so yeah, I'm the writer, the actor he doesn't want, and Sigourney Weaver is the network executive that loves me, and then just sort of one thing leads to another, and his pilot that he cares about that's serious, that's actually about like a suicide and the family and a guy coming home, and it's like kind of, you know, it's kind of some drama to it. You know, by the end, it's called Call Me Crazy, and it's like a wacky comedy, and like it's just turned into crap, and it's also picked up, so he's sort of responsible to write like 22 episodes of a show that he doesn't even know what it is anymore. Right. So it's this kind of, and the more I learn, the more experience I have, I realize that this movie's like a tragedy. This movie's like not funny at all. Yeah. And I remember I took a friend, a writer, to the premiere, and he just like left afterwards. He was like, "I don't think I can go to the party. That was the most depressing movie." I'm serious. Yeah. And I get it now. Now I'm like, oh man, that movie. But so that was a huge deal for me.
Yeah.
And everything was, you know, downhill afterwards.
No.
And
what was the next, like, okay, I do think about your career in terms of, like, okay, that's level one. Level two is...
Yeah,
this,
I had like, a cool, I had a bunch of neat movies. Like, you know, there was, like, The Village was thrown in there, Matchstick Men.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, Training Day I did while I was in college, but there was some neat roles. I did this cool little movie called Night of the White Pants that didn't get the release it deserved, but with Tom Wilkinson and Selma Blair. And it was, like, Nick Stahl. I'm trying to think who else was in it, but it was a really cool, funny movie. Tom Wilkinson is just, you know,
amazing.
The man. Yeah, and so I played his son, and it was like that was a big deal for me. It just didn't pan out, but I know you can find it out there, and it's a sweet, funny movie, so it's worth checking out. But
can I ask you, actually, I'm curious, because you mentioned The Village, because that one is always one that intrigues me, because you also got a chance beyond M. Night Shyamalan, like a couple like super intense actors that I love in that one, like William Hurt.
Oh yeah,
who like is legendary, and I've
yeah.
heard some interesting stories about. He's like a unique guy.
Yeah,
and Joaquin like unique
yeah.
is the word.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
what,
yeah.
What are
yeah.
your recollections of both of those guys?
Oh man, I don't. Oh dude, yeah, they
without ruining a relationship.
I know. I was like, I feel like some things I can't say. Well, I definitely like spent some time in Joaquin's trailer. hearing about the JFK assassination. I swear to God.
What's his take on it?
You know what? I can't remember. Because there was like a lot of takes, and like I was pretty freaked out. I was pretty starstruck and other things, you know. And I was like, I can't be on this set and go to his trailer anymore. Michael Pitt, who I was a huge fan of,
yeah.
he was in that. And also the coolest thing, he wanted to really build the sense of community, Shyamalan, so he had us living all in one house during the entire, this was like a 4-month shoot, and we were in the middle of rural Pennsylvania, not really, we were like 40 minutes out of Philly, but in like Chad's Ford, and we lived in this, he took over a bed and breakfast. And granted, the movie stars kind of had the cottages, but nevertheless, like, you know, Sigourney, we all had dinner together. I mean, it was like a Real World or something, you know what I mean? With like Adrian Brody, Joaquin Phoenix, Brendan Gleeson, William Hurt,
oh my God.
Sigourney, I mean, no, and then, and Cherry Jones, who's
yeah.
like the greatest, yeah, her, what's it called, Glass Menagerie, that production was like
that.
Perfect.
That was
it was
exactly
like, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, so that was Judy Greer, who I just like had the biggest crush on. Bryce Dallas Howard, it was her first film. I mean, it was a crazy cast.
It really
and,
is awesome now that I think about it, yeah.
But Hurt, with all of his kind of, like, you know, he would, like, just go on tangents or, you know, he would just, like, do his William Hurt thing at dinner sometimes. But, I mean, I was so, it was overwhelming, you know, the stars. And for me, it was a really big deal. But I remember I had my sort of, my scene, you know, I didn't have that big of a part, but I'd sort of pop in and out. And I had a scene that it was about me and I was nervous. And he gave me really good advice being like, you know, you got this role. This is no longer auditioning, you know, everyone, now we're trying to make the best project.
Sure.
And so you have all the time you need tomorrow because people are just, you know, wanting to, you know, the thing to work. And so you take all the time you need because everyone's here for you tomorrow. You know what I mean? And it was still, I mean, you know, you still feel on the spot. You know, it's not like it takes pressure off. But in a way, it did. And it's something that, like, sort of I remember that you kind of have the you've gotten the job. And now this is time to sort of play around and find it and know that everyone's rooting for you.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
think
yeah,
of
yeah.
yourself as a teammate, you know what I mean, as opposed to trying out for the team still. And
right.
it's hard when you're surrounded with famous people, but it was cool. It was really meaningful advice that he gave me, and this was like the night before, and it stuck with me, and it's things I've tried to tell other people, you know, because you see that on a set. People get nervous and tighten up, you know, if so-and-so's on, a movie star's on the set, or a lot of times things move fast, and you're not getting the sort of encouragement or you feel like that you want to, there's a level of comfort that's not there. And it's sort of, you kind of have to remember that it really is, you
yeah.
know, because people, we just want to make the best product, you know.
I just had on the, I don't know if you know Chris Messina, the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He did the podcast last week, and he was talking about how he literally had the worst actor's nightmare come to life on The Newsroom last season.
Oh, wow.
They gave him like a 3-page speech that he just didn't have time to memorize.
Oh, no.
And he literally like did like 50 takes and just in front of like The Newsroom,
correct.
Jane Fonda and Sam Waterston in front of him.
And he's just, yeah.
He just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And, but the most
yeah.
endearing part of his story was that basically like Jane Fonda was like basically saying to him, I love you for this. Like, yeah. Sam Waterston was saying, like, this is what acting actually is. This is the work we're seeing.
Yeah.
I could imagine you've all been there.
Absolutely. And it is sort of, I don't know, this is going to sound messed up, but it is kind of comfort, you know what I mean? It is nice to see. Obviously, like, we all want to come in, memorize, and prepare, but there is some truth
to it.
Life
gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, things happen, you know what I mean? And there is something nice. I don't know, it kind of does build a sense of community when, like, someone else is screwing up.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because, like, it is sort of our worst nightmare. And then you kind of, then it's exactly that. You do remember that it's, like, it's okay because we're all here for you. And you take all the time you need. I mean, obviously, sometimes that's not.
Well,
that's not. You gotta sort of remember that. And so that was a big deal. But, yeah, and, I mean, just Joaquin was just the man. Just super funny and so talented, and now I think he's taken on a whole. I think at that stage in his career, he was an awesome actor, great. But now he's sort of
he's
on this other level
Daniel
now.
Day-Lewis level,
yeah,
the
Daniel,
insanity.
Yeah. And it might have taken his whole, like, bearded sort of rap stage to sort of get there. I don't even know if that was still. I still don't know if that was, like, a joke or not.
Yeah, I was gonna say when you saw that happening, did you know what was going on?
I didn't know, but I also knew he was like he's so funny. You know, he was the funniest guy on set. And so I kind of thought so, but then the commitment, like you said, he's like Daniel Day-Lewis now. Then at a certain point, I was like, I just don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I don't know.
So is the you know, you can't do an interview with Frank Kranz without mentioning Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Does Joss Whedon part?
Oh, yeah, we made it like pretty far.
I'm curious, like, have you negotiated that? Like, because like in terms of, like, the amount of your life spent on Joss Whedon projects, it's a relatively small amount. But I would think people want to talk to you about that stuff a ton. Are you comfortable and, like, are you surprised by how much that has kind of, like, dominated the narrative of your career a little bit?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised because, like, you know, I had a friend because I hadn't watched his stuff and I knew who he was, but I didn't watch Buffy or anything when I auditioned for Dollhouse. And, like, speaking in terms of chapters or stages of my career, certainly after that, Dollhouse was next. I did a show called Welcome to the Captain, but it was during the writer's strike, and John Hamburg, who is our creator, is awesome, but he wasn't even allowed on set. And so it was a short-lived, like, 6-episode run, and then we were canceled. And, like, so Dollhouse was really the next stage. And someone told me, he was like, this is going to change your career. Like, he was like, you will always have fans no matter what happens in your career. Like, you're always going to have fans now. And it didn't. I was like, all right, whatever. You know, that doesn't mean any. And then and it's sort of true. You know what I mean? I obviously, I want to work forever, and, you know, that's kind of the nice perk of the job. There's no real retirement, and, you know, I want my career to, you know, be whatever, larger than sort of the Topher from Dollhouse or whatever. but it is sort of true. But I also, I love Joss. Like, he's so brilliant, and the fact that now he's gotten this, you know, this new kind of status as, you know, this A-list director with Avengers, and he's still continuing to, he's not relaxing, you know what I mean? He's not taking his foot off the brake, like releasing that movie on Vimeo, In Your Eyes.
Yeah.
He's always looking for new creative ways to sort of further the business and further sort of the art form, and he's not a guy that's going to be like, yeah, just give me another superhero movie,
right,
and I'm just going to make millions of bucks, and this is what I've always wanted. You know what I mean? He's a true creative, you know, I think, genius, you know?
A lazy guy doesn't do, in between Avengers, a Shakespeare play at his house.
No, you know, it's crazy. Because also, I mean, I'd love to direct someday, but, like, it's hard doing the acting part.
Yeah.
And when you're like a 24. Those guys, like, don't go to bed after when you rap. They're just, like, talking about tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, that job's on another level. So for him to do, I mean, that's insane. To do Much Ado About, in between Avengers, the photography and post-production. I mean, it's totally insane. But I don't expect him to stop. Like, if anything, I expect more surprises like that from him, you know what I mean? And for you know, as long as he's living, you know, and so in that sense, like, you couldn't have a better, you know, I'm very happy and proud and, like, humbled to have an association with a guy like that. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be crazy not to. So And I am a fan. Now that I've seen his stuff, I get it, and I love his, you know, Firefly is like one of my favorite shows. So me, you know, getting stopped in the street, or, you know, I think I've said this even to you before, or someone, but like I sometimes talk to the fans longer than like they intend. You know what I mean? They're like, okay, like, I gotta
good.
Go.
I
yeah.
got what I needed.
Yeah, yeah.
I got my story.
Exactly. I'm like, wanna hang out sometime? Free? I got nothing to. You know what I mean? Because now I'm definitely one of them, genuinely a fan of the guy. And you know, when it comes to our working relationship, I'm taken very seriously. You know, like we've hung out and we're friends and we've had, you know, been to his house for parties and stuff, but I mostly consider myself his like employee, you know.
Right.
And I kind of prefer that relationship because it's been so rewarding, you know.
Do you enjoy like the audition process? Like, I would imagine, like, do you get like stressed over? I would imagine you've been on some like high profile big films that whether they came to fruition or not.
Right.
Like, do you get stressed before like the big, like the studio ones, the superhero, the big franchise thing?
It depends. You know, mostly not now. Like, certainly not pilots, because you just, they're like so out of your control.
Right.
And I've had everything happen. I've been like, you know, I've had them get picked up. I've been recast. I've had them not get picked. Like a pilot's, even the test doesn't stress me out anymore because
right.
it's almost, there's almost like a bitterness now. I'm just like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So, but in a way that's really liberating, and I think you do really good work, you know? And I think there's a lot of truth to that. If you walk into a room confident or definitely not desperate, like that reads, and then you're loose, you know. And so, but certainly like certain films, and actually now that I've said that, I'm just thinking of, there was an HBO pilot, which personally I think is on a different level than a network pilot. Sorry.
You're right.
And this was Jay Roach. He's doing this show called The Brink. Have you heard about this?
Yeah. Oh, wait, this has some amazing people in it, right?
It's
Tim Robbins.
Stupid. It's Tim Robbins, Jack Black, and what's his name? Pablo Schreiber, Liev's brother,
yeah.
You know? And it's, I mean, it's, I think it's genius. It's Doctor Strange. It's a present day Doctor Strangelove, basically, TV show. It's about the brink of World War III and today. And anyway, so when I met Jay for Jack Black's role, it was before he was involved, and they like really liked me. And then Jack Black got it, so I was like, well, you know, they went that way, yeah. But then they were like, we think you could still do this other part. And then that got me sort of, when those things happen, when it's such a cool project and you've already kind of given up on it, then it really plays a mind game. When you sort of let something go, but then they come back and they're like, but hey, what about, then you're like, oh, it's meant to be. You know what I mean?
Right,
when you're
right.
sort of teased a little bit and then let off the hook, like that's when things start to feel a little real, and that's when you kind of get in your head a little bit. So that's like the last time I remember being like really sort of psyched out in a bad way, where I was just kind of nervous and like pacing in the waiting room. You know what I mean? Like, I actually went to the bathroom. And it was one of those situations where they give you a key or whatever, and I like came back and they were like, the key, please. And I'm like, sorry, that's just like, I left the key, and you know what I mean? Like, I just
right.
wasn't like talking about loose. I was
mind.
Not. I was not loose.
Jack Black got in your head.
Yeah, totally, totally. But no, that show's gonna be amazing. And but yeah, in general, no, I feel like I'm.
Been around the block a couple
I've
times.
I've been around
now.
The block a couple times, and I feel good about where my career is, but obviously I want, you know, much, you know, I want much more, you know.
Are you ready to dip your hand into a sketchy Indiana Jones fedora?
Yeah, I was wondering what that was all about over there.
What's weird about that?
Yeah.
This is a few random questions. You don't have to answer them all because we'd be here for 3 hours.
Yeah.
But one or two. These are, some are good, some are bad, some are just stupid.
Yeah, okay.
Ready? Here we go.
Do I have to say... Oh, favorite Godfather. Yeah, wow. favorite Godfather movie. I'm usually a big believer in what started the franchise is just inherently the best.
Right.
I really do believe the first Star Wars is the best, and everyone's like, you're an idiot, Empire. But I really do believe it is. And I'm talking about Episode 4, all you
Not
kids. Not
Phantom
Menace? Yeah. I am a Sith fan. I am a Revenge of the Sith fan.
Really?
Now. I know. I am.
Well, I actually genuinely defend more so than any of my friends would like, the prequels.
The prequels,
I think
yeah.
okay. I don't think they're horrible.
No. I've gotten over the initial sort of shock and hatred. bitterness. Yeah, no, but I thought, at a certain point, I thought, well, wait a minute, he's just taking it to another level that, and obviously I like actors, I'm an actor, but in the first, like, 10 minutes or so of Phantom Menace, it's just, or some Revenge of the Sith, it's just this giant space fight or whatever, yeah. and there's nothing, there's no people, there's nothing, I don't know if there was a camera, you know what I mean? It's yeah. just, it's a world, and it's, like, drawn up on computers. In a way, I was kind of like, well, that's kind of genius, like, that is sort of, and then someone made the comment that at the end, when Darth Vader's all Frankenstein-y, and it was sort of silly, that it was also kind of a nod to the idea that you've kind of created a monster. You know what I mean? You've created, it's no longer human. It's like you've used parts and you've kind of created a machine, a sort of robot monster. And that's kind of what Sith was, this sort of, you know, synthesis of that. And it's taken on another level. Huh. Anyway, Godfather.
So your allegiance is to one.
My allegiance is to one, but see, two, De Niro's kind of my favorite. When it comes to American actors, De Niro is sort of, like, I think Taxi Driver is my probably favorite, one of my, you know, it's like, it's the sort of go-to, it's kind of a changing moment for me, you know? So I kind of think two in a way, and also I love how two manages to jump, that's not easy, flashbacks, you know? And, like, that, so that movie, like, structure-wise, or how it was sort of done and structured and technically, it's sort of astounding, you know what I mean? So in a way, despite me always saying the number, they'll go with the one, I think I gotta go with two.
Should we even mention three?
I mean, so, yeah, you know, I think there's a couple amazing scenes in it.
I agree.
You know, I think it's when he goes to the Vatican and has that kind of, like, come-to-Jesus moment.
Oh, yeah, that part.
Do you know what I'm saying?
In the early part of it, or the end?
The confessional.
Oh, yeah, confessional thing.
I come to Jesus. I don't know. Anyway, that's, like, kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And really well shot. And then the opera finale on the steps. And maybe it's just because she finally died, Sofia Coppola. Sorry.
She lived a better life as a filmmaker. I think she would agree.
I shouldn't talk shit about her. you want to work with her. Yeah, yeah, who doesn't want
to
work with her?
She doesn't make it to the end of my podcast, don't worry. She's out after 20 minutes.
I don't think you should throw it at three out entirely.
I agree.
But I also just said Sith was a great movie.
Yeah, we are lost every fan that either of us have ever had.
Yeah.
Do we know the fate of Murder of a Cat yet? Are you guys looking for
I don't know, but we've gotten some good reviews. I mean, the response was really positive. And like I said, it's like it's a totally weird movie, but it was definitely confirmed last night that there's an audience.
Awesome.
Like people were really loving it. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. No, it's fun. It's quirky.
It's totally out there. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so happy to always catch up with you.
Buddy. Yeah, man.
Thanks
so
for
sweet.
Stopping by today.
Yeah.
Murder of a Cat. Find it somewhere. It's going to pop up somewhere. And when it does, you'll enjoy it.
At the Ziegfeld.
Ziegfeld. You've got a good sense of humor. If you're a little bit off,
yeah,
you'll like Murder of a Cat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, good to see you, man.